This is NPR News. I'm Chris Farrell, in for Angela Davis. Voters in both Minneapolis and St. Paul are going to weigh in on rent control on November 2nd, which is next week. Now, a measure on the ballot in Minneapolis would give the Minneapolis City Council power to limit rent increases. St. Paul's rent stabilization proposal is more specific, and it would be the first of its kind in the country if it passes. A coalition of housing advocates and neighborhood groups gathered more than 9,000 signatures to put the proposed measure on the ballot. It would cap rent increases at 3% each year. Unlike rent policies elsewhere, St. Paul's cap would apply immediately to new apartment buildings as well as existing units, and it would stop landlords from dramatically raising rents between tenants. During the next hour, I'll talk with an advocate of the proposed ballot measure in St. Paul and with someone who is opposed to it. And we're going to start our conversation with an overview with Fred Mello. He's a reporter with the Pioneer Press who covers St. Paul, and Fred has been writing about the St. Paul ballot measure. Welcome, Fred.
Thanks for having me.
And before I get to Fred, I do want to reach out to our listeners. You know, we really do want to hear from you later in the hour. How do you plan to vote on St. Paul's proposed ordinance and why? But first, Fred, we know there's a serious problem with affordability in St. Paul. Let's just look at St. Paul because that's where the measure really is. Rent's increasingly out of reach for many people, especially people who, you know, earn low wages, live on fixed incomes. So what are you hearing from renters?
Well, really, you have to think of the market in terms of three terms, three different kind of categories. There's this kind of high-end, maybe the renter, let's say, at that brand-new construction in uptown Minneapolis that can afford a little more. And you know, they've seen their rents kind of go up in keeping with their wages or even under what they could afford. For that lower end, if you were in a $500 studio apartment in 2006, today your rent's probably gone up, you know, 44%, 50%. That apartment's probably closer to $700. And your income has not gone up 44%. It's more like gone up 3%. So there's a real disparity there at the lower end of the market. And it's that end of the market that's getting hit with back-to-back increases, sudden rent spikes, apartment buildings being sold to new owners who then want to remodel or just hike the rent by several hundred dollars all in one swoop.
So how common is, for the third tier that you were mentioning, I mean, how common are these big jumps in rents?
Well, I can't exactly speak to how common, but kind of anecdotally, we're hearing more and more that that's happening. I talked to a renter by the name of Marcus Troy. He's lived in a fourplex since 2012. His rent was $850. They said, you know what, now your rent's going to be $925. Oof. His apartment had been sold to an out-of-state company based in Utah. And suddenly, you know, things like maintenance, you have to fill out some online form to get a maintenance guide to your apartment. And that's a 9% rent hike overnight. I think it's becoming more common. But the question is, would rent control kind of really stop that? Would it fix it?
Right. And so, you know, give us your overview of, you know, what would the, you know, what's in the rent stabilization measure? I mean, what should people be focusing
sure.
on when they're trying to evaluate it?
Okay. So what's on the ballot in on November 2nd in St. Paul is a 3% cap. So your rents could not go up more than 3% per year. That's true if it's new construction, old construction, you know, a one-bedroom apartment that you're renting out in your home, or a multi-unit, the high-end building. That's a little different than what you see in New York or San Francisco, where if you move out of an apartment, it becomes decontrolled and the rent can go back up, or maybe new construction's exempt for the first 15 years. This is across the board, and it's implemented immediately. Now, on one side of the aisle, they're saying, great, this fixes a lot of the problems you see in New York, where people hold on to a rent-controlled apartment for generations. They don't want to move because they know that the next apartment in the market, the newer construction, is really pricey, and it's not rent-controlled. It's exempt for 15 years. So this kind of fixes that in their eyes. The critics say, no, not at all. You're just going to see a big sell-off. You're going to see the mom-and-pop owners say, hey, I'm not going to deal with this. I'm going to turn this into a condo. I'm going to sell to a national chain. There's going to be less investment. Property taxes still go up. So now the landlord's scratching his head or her head saying, how do I make these numbers work with a cap? That sell-off of units could potentially create fewer affordable units.
And there are exemptions, right? Or there can be appeals that can be made for an exemption from the 3%?
Well, that's the funny part about this ballot is that it doesn't quite spell out how that process would work. But it says the city and the city council need to craft the process like that. So it's still a little up in the air how you would appeal. But certainly listed among the potential things to appeal over are a big property tax spike, a major remodel, a major improvement. So certainly the city would have to hire some kind of appeals officers or some kind of hearing officer, maybe make a whole new, you know, office in government to hear these requests. So one of the concerns is, are you going to get flooded with requests for exemptions? Oakland has a very elaborate system to hear all these appeals. Oregon basically has nothing. So we've seen both ends of the spectrum there, but some of that is yet to be determined.
Okay. Well, thanks for this overview, and you're going to be able to stay with us, right, for the rest of the hour?
Sure.
Oh, absolutely. Great. Thank you. So now we want to turn to a supporter, and then we'll get to an opponent of the measure, the ballot measure on rent control. And first, let's hear from the yes side. And joining us on the line is Tram Huang. Tram is the campaign manager for Keep St. Paul Home, the effort to pass rent stabilization. And she's been a key organizer with Housing Equity Now St. Paul, which is a coalition of housing advocates and neighborhood groups that, you know, got the rent control proposal on the ballot. Welcome. I'm glad you could join us.
Hi, Chris. Good morning. Thanks so much for having me. My name's Tram.
And I apologize for that. So tell us, what will the rent stabilization measure do if it's passed on November 2nd?
Yeah, so to build off a little bit of what Fred mentioned, if passed, the ordinance would limit maximum annual rent increases on all rental units in the city to 3%. So to put that into real world numbers, if someone is paying $1,500 a month on rent, they would see a maximum rent increase of $45 in a 12-month period. And of course, because it's a percentage, that increase every year would grow from, you know, $45 to $47 to $50 eventually. And like we discussed, there would be a process that the city has to create. And there's actually going to be a 6-month implementation period after Election Day. So it doesn't immediately become active. We know that because of state preemption, the city is actually prevented from rulemaking around the process prior to the ordinance being passed. So we have to pass it before the city can figure out how to implement, and that's why there's a 6-month implementation period built in.
So why do you think St. Paul needs rent control?
Yeah, thank you for asking that. Well, we are a majority renter city in St. Paul, but we currently lack any protections for the renters that call our city home. And in what our coalition member organizations have been seeing in their tenant organizing work across the city are stories of economic displacement, right? Where people experience rent increases that are hundreds of dollars a month, causing displacement at best or homelessness at worst. And a few examples of what we've seen, you know, an apartment building full of seniors on the east side recently experienced a rent hike from $900 to $1,475 with no improvements. That is a 66% rent increase for people who are on fixed incomes. And it ended up displacing many of those tenants. In Frogtown, we've seen Karen refugee families from Burma who have faced displacement in the form of having to escape their countries of origin, only to have to relive that trauma of instability when they get a notice that their rent is going up $300 a year. And of course, we also have families who have moved multiple times a year to find housing, which really destabilizes kids and impacts educational outcomes.
And how did you arrive at a cap of 3%? How did that number come about?
Yeah. It came about from a lot of research. So, you know, no two cities or states have identical ordinances, and we wanted to make sure that our policy was very carefully crafted in order to, one, avoid the common unintended consequences that other cities have seen, and more importantly, crafted to fit our local housing markets. Why we spent so much time looking at the Center for Urban and Regional Affairs research that came out earlier this summer. To look at, you know, what is the history of rent increases that the Twin Cities has seen so that we don't interfere with the majority of property owners' operations. And that's why we arrived to 3%, because median rent increases have not been above 3% in the past 20 years.
So, as you know, one of the main criticisms of rent control, rent stabilization policies is that over time, it erodes the incentives to build new housing, to increase the supply of apartments in a market.
Yes. And that's a fear that's being spread. But the empirical evidence just shows that is not true. The research I mentioned earlier by the Center for Urban Regional Affairs did a really thorough literature review. And what they found was that there's little empirical evidence to show that rent control policies negatively impact new construction. And this is across the 180 plus cities and states that have implemented it. As we know, construction rates are highly dependent on localized economic cycles and credit markets. These are the things that investors are really looking at when they are deciding whether or not to put money into an investment tool like a housing development.
And what about the concern that these types of measures, again, over time, not overnight, but over time, you know, they really push out the local landlord, the landlord that lives in the neighborhood, the landlord that is part of the community, the landlord that is a small business owner, because it's the larger rental companies, national rental companies. You know, they can hire the lawyers that understand the regulations, the rules. So it leads to consolidation.
Yes. Well, that fear of corporate landlords is something that we share with our local property owners, right? We know from recent research that corporate landlords have been buying up our single family housing market and turning them into rentals at a vastly higher rate in recent years. And these are the same landlords that actually use economic displacement as a profit tool. And we know from conversations with local landlords that is not something that they do, right? Local landlords are invested in our community. They know who their tenants are. They don't have to pick up the phone and call Utah or Atlanta or California when they need a maintenance repair. And so we understand that concern, but we know that it's not going to be an issue because this ordinance is really designed to disincentivize that corporate landlord presence.
And then what about newcomers? You know, the Twin Cities is growing. Lots of people want to live here. There's a lot of economic opportunity. I mean, it's one of the reasons why we have such a shortage. And does rent control, rent stabilization, you know, it's a policy that favors people who are here versus people who want to move here?
Well, that's actually, since we don't have vacancy decontrol, it actually benefits everyone equally, regardless of whether they have lived here for 20 years or if they're just moving here. What Fred mentioned earlier is that our policy doesn't have vacancy decontrol, which means that if someone moves out of an apartment, the next person is still, you know, is still in a unit that is protected by that 3% increase, which means that if I'm a newcomer, you know, I've moved across the city to find more affordability, I all of a sudden don't see my rent jacked up because someone moved. And so the protection is across the board.
Well, thank you very much for taking your time. I really appreciate it.
Of course. Thank you.
Trong Wang is the campaign manager for Keep St. Paul Home and an organizer with Housing Equity Now St. Paul, the coalition that's urging a yes vote on the proposed rent stabilization ordinance on the ballot in St. Paul. And now I want to turn to the no side on the St. Paul ballot question. But before I do that, just to say we want to hear from you. You know, if you're a renter, have you experienced a dramatic rent increase that created hardship? If you're a property owner, could you make a reasonable profit if you're limited to a 3% annual rent increase or not? Give us a call at 651-227-6000 or 800-242-2828. And my next guest is Adam Dunick. He's Director of Government Affairs for the North Central States Regional Council of Carpenters. The union represents members in Minnesota and five other Midwestern states. Adam is also former chair of the Metropolitan Council, and he joins us from his office in St. Paul. Welcome.
Good morning, Chris. Thank you for having me.
So first, just to start off, do you consider that there's a renter crisis, a housing affordability crisis in St. Paul?
You know, I would submit to you there's a housing affordability crisis in the region and across the state. It's something that we've worked on at the Capitol and City Hall and trying to tackle the problem a lot of different ways. It's a housing crisis, I would argue, has grown out of a disinvestment that has occurred at the federal and state level. And the real issue for us is housing supply. There's not enough houses for sale. There's not enough apartment buildings being built, rentals, condos, townhomes, all across the board from single family to multifamily. And the real issue that we need to tackle and that this amendment doesn't tackle is supply and how we build more units. And that's why our organization, the Carpenters Union, and others are proud to be a part of the coalition to work against this rent control amendment.
So walk us through the thinking why, if it passed, so we have rent control, rent stabilization, it gets passed. So walk us through the process, how this would slow down new construction.
Sure. I think it's already having a chilling effect. There are developers and companies that have come to us and come to other decision makers and said, we're going to hold on making decisions about property, real estate development right now. So I think that's already taking place. In terms of how it will affect going forward, I think it has a twofold effect. One, it has the potential and likelihood of deterring national investments. So if national investors are looking at certain regions to invest their dollars in, they just won't even look at the state of Minnesota and the Twin Cities as a region. And we've heard that from funders, from financial organizations, financial entities. And secondly, it has a potential effect of steering investments away from the center cities and towards the suburban communities. And people will say, well, Minneapolis and St. Paul does business this way. We're going to go do business somewhere else. We're going to go to a different community. And we've seen certain regions around the country where that impact happens. We don't want a hollowed out core. We want a really strong and vibrant Minneapolis and St. Paul, as well as a really strong and vibrant suburban surrounding community. And I think that when decisions get made about where to spend resources, where to build units, it's a mix of economic decisions, factors such as rent stabilization, rent control, but also kind of what demand is and what the interest level is and those sorts of things. But we're seeing it already, and I think we would see it even in a much more chilling way going forward if this amendment was adopted.
So if it was adopted, what would be the impact on your members?
The concern there, again, is that there would be less work opportunities. And candidly, the best, I think what the root cause of a housing crisis that we're dealing with is one of wage stagnation and putting dollars in the pockets of consumers. And one of the best ways to do that is to give them a good job. And if there's less housing being built because there's not a lot of dollars that are being invested in housing development, that's going to lead to less consumers being able to purchase a home or afford the rents that they to live where they want to live and have that freedom and flexibility to live in the city or area that they want to live. I joked yesterday to a friend. I said, what's the best way to counteract the housing crisis? I said, join a union, become a carpenter, go, get in the trades, find a job that is family sustainable and gives you good benefits, because that's what's going to help us grow the supply. And then that's what's also going to hopefully help us overcome this housing crisis.
So, I mean, you're deeply involved in this market. So what do you think would work to address this rental crisis, people just being hit with, 66% rent increases or a 9% rent increase. And that's frankly, just even finding a place. So what do you think policymakers, the community, our neighborhoods, what should we be focusing on?
Sure. I think a couple increased investment at the affordable housing level of the 30% AMI, that area median income. That's the level that we have the lowest supply in the country. There's a really good article in the paper about that over the weekend that laid out how the Twin Cities does not have that housing stock, that supply. So target the investments at that level. I also think an increased awareness and an ability for consumers or homeowners or renters that are being affected in that sort of way, if they're being, if they're exploited or having those costs raised, what's the recourse for them? Because again, some of the rent control advocates have said, well, 3%, most rents have gone up only 3% or less anyway, so this won't affect a lot of people. And if that's the case, if there are people that are becoming victims of bad landlords or high rent increases, what are some tools we can give them in a legal system or in sort of a regulatory oversight system that allows them to try to deal with those landlords in those cases in a one-off sort of way? It doesn't make sense to me to have a blanket policy that then impacts an entire city and again puts St. Paul and Minneapolis out on an island policy-wise versus other cities and communities, both around the country as well as here in the Twin Cities region.
Well, thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Adam Dunick is Director of Government Affairs for the North Central States Regional Council of Carpenters, and the union opposes rent stabilization and supports a no vote on St. Paul's ballot measure. So for this hour, we've been talking about, and we will be talking about, the rent stabilization measure on the ballot for St. Paul. And we're going to take a break pretty soon for the news, and when we come back, we want to hear from you. So how do you plan to vote on St. Paul's proposed measure about rent stabilization, rent control, and why? I mean, if you're a renter, what has been your experience with rent increases? If you're a property owner, seriously, could you make a reasonable profit if you had to limit rent increases to 3% or less each year or not? I mean, give us a call at 651-227-6000 or 800-242-2828. Today at noon, NPR News and We Are Still Here, Minnesota, are collaborating on a virtual in-focus event. Twyla Deng, co-host with me of the Small Change podcast, is moderating a conversation about sustainability in Indian Country. You can still register for this free event at nprevents.org. Again, that's In Focus at noon today. At 9 tomorrow at this time, you can listen to our In Focus conversation about sustainability in Indian Country. How are indigenous communities in Minnesota reclaiming their lands and culture and ensuring their ways of life are viable for the seven generations? And on the podcast for the show, you can listen to day two of Angela's coverage of Worthington and Nobles County, Minnesota. Nobles is the most rapidly diversifying county in the state. Angela and producer Samantha Matsumoto visited in September and put together the two special reports. Download the podcast for NPR News with Angela Davis, and you can listen whenever it's convenient for you.
Support comes from your friends and neighbors at Maplewood Toyota, selling and servicing the vehicles that keep Minnesota moving, striving to keep you safely on the road each and every day. Maplewood Toyota, we are who you are.
Now back to our conversation about a rent stabilization proposal on the ballot in St. Paul. I'm Chris Farrell, sitting in for Angela Davis. And with me for the rest of the hour is Fred Mello, who's been covering the proposed rent ordinance as a reporter for the St. Paul Pioneer Press. And we heard earlier in the hour from someone who supports limiting rent increases in St. Paul to 3% annually, and we heard from someone who opposes the measure. Now we want to hear from you. How will you vote on the rent stabilization measure that is on the ballot for St. Paul voters, and why? The number is 651-227-6000 or 800-242-2828. And let's go right to the phone lines, and let's go to Patrick in St. Paul. So, Patrick, how will you be voting?
I'll be voting no. I'm a landlord. I own two houses that I rent. I rent them on a truly affordable basis, really what people can afford. Currently, one of those houses is a two-bedroom. It's got an elderly gentleman who lives off his $1,000 a month in Social Security. That's all he can afford. So we work that out, for something that meets his level. A four-bedroom house, beautiful. Once again, people have rented it from various prices. We do this at a tremendous loss. This is not a profit-making center for us. We do it to make our neighborhood better. This poorly written and conceived law doesn't take into account those edge cases, those conditions. Sure, there might be an appeals process, but how lengthy is that? And what will have to happen in the interim?
Okay, so let's go now to Cisco, who is also in St. Paul. And Cisco, I understand you're also a landlord. Cisco? All right, well, let's jump over to Dana in St. Paul. Dana?
Hi, Chris.
Hi.
I just want to say I'm voting for this. Everyone across race, class, or zip code deserves a stable home. After my father died, my mom moved all five of us into a two-bedroom apartment, and it was awful. With rent spikes, moms have to make choices about food and medical. I didn't go to the dentist until 11th grade, Chris. 11th grade. No parent should have to make these choices. I want to push back on what Adam said about new construction. Just building new apartments that are not affordable does not help our neighbors. And I studied rent stabilization back to the 1970s, and adjacent cities and the core of cities with rent stabilization do not suffer. Things are statistically equal. Right now, rent stabilization is more in more than 400 cities. And after November 2022, this just becomes a regular ordinance that the city council can build on or tinker with. So as your previous caller has some concerns, if he has some concerns, this just becomes a regular ordinance that can be built on for affordable, stable rent for families down in the lower quartile.
Well, thank you so much for calling up. And Fred, I want to bring you into this. Are these the kind of remarks that you have been hearing with your reporting? What is your reaction?
Well, this is a really personal conversation for the renter, for the property owner, certainly for the mom-and-pop landlord, like we've heard. Absolutely. There's a lot of concern, no matter where you stand, if especially if you're a St. Paul resident, about kind of the future of the city and the future of everyday residents. One thing that's important to remember, rent control does not determine at what price point new construction comes in. You could build, and we've seen this in New York, you know, a brand new apartment that you rent out for $4,000 a month, you can build a $1 million penthouse. That starting point is not controlled. What's controlled is how much you increase the rent from there. It can't go up more than 3% a year. So this kind of argument that, well, this will fix everything, I don't think anyone's saying that. The housing advocates who believe in rent control aren't saying it. The critics aren't saying it. It's one tool in the toolbox, and it's either going to help or hurt, depending upon who you talk to. But it's not going to create new affordable units. One of the concerns is, could it make the existing units less affordable? If a landlord says, look, I can't bank my increase, what if I need to go to 5% next year because of inflation, which is a really real concern? Maybe I have to go all the way to 3% this year and 3% next year to get to that 5% because I can't do it in 1 year. So rents might go up a little faster than expected. And that's kind of the San Francisco concern that's been brought up in certain studies, that you actually got more gentrification. And the new units coming in were really high end. That's a concern, but there's a counter argument there that either way, with rent control, without rent control, the market doesn't produce affordability. Government subsidies and nonprofits coming in, like Habitat for Humanity, building new affordable units creates affordability.
So now let's go to Amanda in St. Paul. Amanda?
Hi.
Hi. What is your observation or question?
So just more or less an observation, and I'm full of questions, but we can postpone that.
I'll take your observation. Thank you.
So I am a recent transplant from rural Minnesota to St. Paul. And I would say that the rents are typically higher, but I don't feel like this is a situation that is capped just within the metro area. I think that statewide, and I come from Brainerd Lakes area, it is very high. It's high everywhere, and it continues to increase. So to start in one area and say that we're going to control it is just kind of silly. But also that we're distracted getting away from what the ultimate root cause of this is people can't afford it.
Yeah.
And we work, and I know people that work 2 or 3 jobs, and we can't afford it. And if we continue to build low-income housing, we continue to segregate a culture of people that can't afford things, and it just doesn't seem very progressive as we should be in Minnesota. But I don't think this is going to do anything more than guarantee that you will have a 3% increase every single year from this day forward if it's passed.
And Fred, do you hear that? Just her last point that she was saying there about, well, this just means I know I'm going to be getting 3% from now on.
I hear it from the landlords more than the tenants. But yeah, that's certainly something that kind of the mom and the pop landlords are saying. Well, I only increased the rent 1%, 2%. Now it's going to be 3%. I'm going to increase to the max. Is that really the way things are going to go, or is that kind of
right?
Fear
yeah.
and saber rattling? Ultimately, rents are decided in part by the market, and in part by externalities like property taxes going up. There will be a way to apply for exemptions. Like I said before, that hasn't really been spelled out yet. But that's certainly a concern, and it's not, looking at New York, looking at San Francisco, rents still go up with rent control.
Yes. Let's go to Cisco in St. Paul. We're coming back to you, and I understand you are a landlord.
Yes. Yes, and, I am.
So what is your observation about the rent control measure?
Yeah, so it's kind of twofold for me. As a landlord now, it's important to me to be able to supply that housing for people, both sustainable and affordable. But also as a renter, years ago, I was hit with a rent hike just weeks before Christmas one year, which essentially canceled Christmas for my family. And really, I had no protection. And so I understand this on a couple different levels and how it impacts our community. And I really do believe that putting profits in front of your community is not the right move. And I understand this bill is a step in the right direction. It's not all the answers, but I mean, we got to do something, right? We have to have some sort of safety net in place for people that are renting.
And how will it affect you?
It really won't affect me much. I'm not of the mind frame that now I'm going to raise rent 3% now. For me, again, it's more about community building and really, okay. really providing something sustainable.
Well, thank you so much for calling in. And let's go to Franklin. And Franklin is also from St. Paul. And so, Franklin, how are you weighing in on this?
Well, at this point, I'm undecided. I'm trying to understand the process, and I'd like to know how the ballot language is based on an actual ordinance amendment. How do we get a hold of the text of that proposed draft amendment? And what's the options for City Council to further amend it into the future?
Fred, can you where can you get the language? Actually, look at the measure.
Yeah, I believe there's a copy on the internet, and I just don't have the URL in front of me. But certainly, the city of St. Paul should have that language on its website. The other part of his question is, you know, how quickly can you amend this? And that's a really good question. This is an ordinance proposed by voters to voters. So the city council can't really water it down or tinker with it too much within that first year. After a year, they can repeal it. That's according to the city charter.
Okay.
There'll probably be a discussion this week with the city attorney's office about how much you can change it within that first year legally before it crosses a legal line and you really have to present a new version to voters at a subsequent ballot. That's still a little fuzzy and up in the air.
Let's go across the river to Nicholas, who is in Minneapolis. And so, Nicholas, are you a landlord?
Yes, I have been. Thank you for taking my call since 1981.
So how are you looking at the issue of rent control, rent stabilization?
Well, I would vote, thank you, no. My recent experience will perhaps illustrate for some folks I had on my University of Minnesota is where I've been focused for these 40 years. Some TVs that on the academic calendar, all the young people move around as they learn to live independently. And sometimes there's an excess of solid waste. And I took two 32-inch televisions out to the Hennepin County Recycling Center and was charged $10 per item to recycle the televisions. Subsequently, that same week, I can't say whether it was my resident or it was dumped, but I had apparently, according to my hauler, another television that was showed up on my property and appeared on my solid waste and recycling bill from a private, again, locally owned hauler. And the charge for the television was $175. That is, the upcharge is 1,750% from my recycling receipt from Hennepin County. I paid $10 a TV to try to recycle the solid waste and do the right thing, and my hauler charged me $175. These types of unpredictable charges for the small business owner cannot be limited by 3 or 5% without some very involved discussion. And these issues involve utilities. These issues involve natural disaster insurance premiums okay. that are affected in different segments. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for calling in. And let's stay in Minneapolis, and let's go to Al. And Al, how are you voting?
Well, thank you for taking my call. I'm in Minneapolis, and I've already voted for the potential in Minneapolis. I've been a landlord for a number of years, and I don't think I've ever raised my rent above 3%. Haven't had to, in order to make what I consider a reasonable profit. The problem I see is that there are these large corporate rental companies that come in, and their commitment is wholly to their bottom line, maximum profitization. And I believe that that is where some of this problem lies. It's not... are you still there?
Yep, I'm listening. Yeah.
It's not the smaller property owners that are trying to make what they consider to be a reasonable profit. I think it's coming from these bigger corporation and chains that are not necessarily thinking reasonable, but maximum profit. And that, I think, is what's forcing a lot of people out of the market and, quite frankly, probably making some people homeless.
Okay.
And that's basically where I'm at.
So, Fred, without romanticizing the small business owner, the small landlord, I mean, one of the themes that I'm hearing that's emerging is the difference between your local neighborhood landlord and the big chains, the big rental companies. And does that come up a lot in your reporting?
Yeah, we're hearing that more and more about, especially near universities, but I think even moving beyond that now. I just did a piece about a landlord who's well-known in Dinkytown and northeast Minneapolis, and he's coming into that area around Hamline University and buying up single-family homes and duplexes and then shoving 7 students in there. So we're definitely seeing kind of a corporatization of these smaller homes, which affects everybody because those are entry-level houses for the first-time homebuyers. They're no longer available for that lower to middle section of the market. But it affects renters too, because now your landlord is kind of this faceless office building that might even be located out of state. But now again, the question is, will rent control kind of change that or fix that? That some of these properties are being sold right now with rent control. Does that speed it up? It probably won't stop it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's come back to St. Paul and let's go to Mary. And Mary, what is your observation or thoughts?
So I own a fourplex in St. Paul, owner-occupied. I've owned it for 34 years, and the rents have been affordable all along. I, you know, raise the rents probably once every 4 years. However, my property taxes have been increasing exponentially. So a couple of years back, I actually asked the assessor to come to my home and, you know, make sure the assessment is correct. So he went through all the units, asked me what I was charging, and then said, well, you know, you should really raise your rents. So it's like the city is talking out of both sides of their mouth. They want affordable housing, but they're not valuing the property to keep it affordable. So if I were to increase the rents for the residents as much as my property tax have increased over the past few years, I would have to have increased them 7% every year. So I'm against this. The other thing that was foisted on us as landlords was to have one garbage can for each unit. And so my garbage charge per month went from $31 a month to $93 a month. And I still just have the one can out there. The rest of the cans are behind the garage, not in use. So if the city could guarantee that, costs aren't going to go up more than 3%, I think it would be okay. But they're not. They're going up a lot more than that.
Well, thank you for calling in. And now I want to turn to, let's go to Joe. And Joe is in St. Paul. And Joe, what is your observation?
Thanks very much. Briefly, first, I want to say thanks to Fred. He's done fabulous reporting on this, and I think he's a great example of a local reporter who's really serving the public. Secondly, I'm deeply involved in efforts to dramatically reduce homelessness, and I think part of the solution to this is going to be dramatic expansion of more rental housing. So I voted yes, but I think that what we really, really, really need is much more housing that's available at the truly low-income schedule. So I know you have lots of people to talk to, but thanks for taking my call.
Well, thanks for calling in. And, Fred, this gets to really what is the core issue, I think, and I would like you to weigh in on that, which is, will rent control slow down what everyone agrees the process of creating more housing, or will rent control sort of stabilize the situation, but that while we're waiting for more housing, more rental units, more apartments to come online? And that just seems that debate is the undertone to everything I think we're hearing.
Yeah, you know, four of the seven city council members have publicly said they're voting no. And the mayor of St. Paul, Melvin Carter, said he's voting yes, but he's looking for some fast changes. Whether or not that's even allowed, is unclear. There's a real concern about a slowdown in investment, especially at places like the Ford site, the former Twin Cities Ford manufacturing campus is going to be, you know, they're planning 750 affordable units or more. They're also planning plenty of market rate units, and they would take some of the property taxes off the market rate units and use that as the subsidy for the affordable ones. Well, if investors say, oh, wait, you're going to be capping rents, let's slow down. Maybe I won't invest this year. Let's not construct that right away. That could have a ripple effect and slow down the affordable units. That's what the developers over, you know, at the Ryan companies have said this week. You look at New York, you look at San Francisco, there's never really been a slowdown in investment. These are hot housing markets. Cities are still popular places despite the pandemic. You can start your price point pretty high for the market rate stuff and still get a return on investment. So how much of that is saber rattling and just kind of, you know, trying to throw a wrench in the works? A little unclear, but that's certainly a concern.
Well, let's get the perspective of John. And John also lives in St. Paul. John?
Hi. I just want to say that I'm going to vote yes because my rent has gone up several hundred bucks. It's a corporate situation. Several hundred bucks each year. And I went from being able to save money to now just scraping by, basically. Something has to be done.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. And now let's go to Vic. And Vic, what are you seeing?
So I have worked on affordable housing for a long time in this city, and We've tried a lot of different things from inclusionary housing to other ways on the supply side of providing more housing, and we absolutely must do this. But the status quo is unacceptable. We're seeing rents out of control all across the country, and I think the scare tactics that say there won't be any more development and we're going to drive landlords out of business, I think are just that. They're scare tactics.
So
I think it's essential that we do something, and that's why I'm going to vote yes.
And so I'm curious, from your perspective, have you seen anything that you think would make a difference on the supply side?
Well, I do think we need more subsidies. I think, the federal government got out of the housing business a long time ago, and that has led to a lack of funding. The state of Minnesota doesn't provide enough funding, although that's gotten a little bit better. So on the supply side, we absolutely have to invest more in affordable housing, and especially deeply subsidized housing for people that are at the lowest end, working class people. But on the supplies, on the rental side, this is an important step. And if we find that there are unintended consequences, there are opportunities to make amendments to it, down the road. And I think we should have a better movement forward rather than just scaring people away from voting yes.
All right. Well, thank you. And let's go to Will. And Will, you're also a resident of St. Paul.
Hi, Chris. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah. And so what's your observation?
Well, I've done a lot of study on this subject. This is the most restrictive rent control law in the world, first of all, because it's the only one that controls new construction. So developers will have a choice literally of any other city in the world to build and not be put in the position of having the rents controlled. In New York in the 70s, you couldn't finance improvements or refinance a balloon because lenders wouldn't lend. Okay. Lenders are already withdrawing financing from projects in St. Paul because of the threat of rent control. And it's going to make the housing shortage worse.
All right. Well, thank you very much for calling. And I think we have time to fit in one more caller. So we'll go across the river again. And Aaron in Minneapolis. Aaron?
Hi. Good morning. Thanks so much for taking my call. My name is Aaron. I work at Homeline, which is a statewide nonprofit, a tenant advocacy organization. We run a hotline where renters can call for free legal advice about renting.
Okay.
And I just wanted to share that we hear from tenants every day about getting priced out, and all we can tell them is there's nothing to stop this. We hear from tenants who say, my rent's going up, it's getting doubled next month, what do I do? All we can say is there's no law against this. So I'm voting yes in Minneapolis, and I'm also supporting voters to vote yes in St. Paul because we need a better solution. We need it now. And to be clear, the renters who we talk to who are getting priced out, they're our Black and brown neighbors. They're Native folks. They are the people renting at the lowest income brackets. They're who we need to prioritize and who we need to protect.
Well, thank you very much for calling in. And Fred, in the 30 seconds that are remaining to us, any last thoughts after listening to all these callers who have, and thank you very much for the callers who did call in.
The only thing I would say is, I've seen a little bit of name calling, especially on social media, people saying, well, if you vote against this, you're an elitist capitalist and you just don't care. Or if you vote for this, you're, a communist socialist. I don't believe either of those things are true. There's a lot of nuance. There's about 200 rent control policies around the country. Everyone is spelled out differently. Let's kind of go in with a little more respect.
Well, on that note, thank you very much. And our time is up for today, and I really want to thank Fred Mello for joining us. Fred is a reporter for the Pioneer Press. And earlier in the hour, we heard from Tram Hung, campaign manager for Keep St. Paul Home, which urges a yes vote on the rent stabilization measure. And we also talked to Adam Dunick, director of government affairs for the North Central States Regional Council of Carpenters, which supports a no vote. Today's conversation was produced by Maya Beckstrom. And I'm Chris Farrell, sub-hosting for Angela Davis, and you're listening to NPR News.
Support comes from Doran Leadership Partners, a boutique executive search firm serving middle market companies and nonprofits nationally. Committed to a client-first approach, culturally competent search, and transformational leadership. More at doranleadership.com. Thanks for listening to a recording of my live radio show on NPR News. A reminder, if you want to catch the show in real time, tune in and call in at a new time, 9 a.m. weekdays on NPR News.